Hello, stoned apes and others who are curious about the healing powers of psychedelic medicine. Welcome to the Stoned Ape Reports. I am your host, Stuart Preston. Each episode, I talk to another stoned ape, somebody who has experienced the transformational powers of psychedelics, or with a practitioner who works with these medicines. In this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with C.J. Spotswood, the Entheo Nurse, a board-certified psychiatric mental health registered nurse who works in an emergency department in central Maine. Throughout his career, he has seen and worked with individuals who are having noxious psychedelic experiences. CJ has worked in the medical field for nearly 20 years and practices a holistic approach in his nursing, having graduated from one of only 14 recognized holistic nursing schools in the nation. According to CJ, quote, "The current pharmacological treatments for psychiatric care are merely palliative attempts to address the symptoms. They can't actually cure anything." So, let's hear what else CJ has to say about the benefits of psychedelics, safe tripping, and ensuring that one is medically cleared to go on these journeys. Please enjoy this episode with CJ Spotswood. CJ, thank you so much for joining me here on the Stoned Ape Reports. I know from doing a little research and some back and forth with you that you are a psychiatric nurse, aka the Entheo Nurse. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, that experience and what you're doing these days?
Well, thanks for having me first. I'm a psychiatric nurse. I've been nursing for 19 years. I'm a third generation male nurse. My dad was a psych nurse. My grandfather was as well, which is kind of an interesting thing. Yeah, it's kind of unheard of.
I've never heard of it.
That's awesome. I've never met another third generation male nurse. Lots of females, but never another male. I've been doing this for quite a while. I'm getting close to finishing my psychiatric nurse practitioner. This little side thing came about. I ended up doing a little bit of research while I was in, actually I was doing some research in school, but before that, where my interest was is I work in the emergency department in a hospital here in Maine, where I'm a psych nurse in the ED, where I specifically work as patients are coming in. And I had a patient come in with who was psychotic, no history, trying to figure out more about what had led up to him coming in. And he had disclosed after he was getting better that he actually had been using penis envy mushrooms. And that led me down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out why, because he was self-medicating. And around this time was right before Michael Pollan's book came out. So I ended up reading a lot with Hamilton Morris, things like that, finding more about it. And it was interesting because it was the first time I'd ever had that experience. And it was the worst case scenario that we all fear with someone who might be under the influence and using. But it was a good learning experience. And now I've seen so much good coming out of it that I feel I need to start talking about it more. I threw an abstract in to the American Psychiatric Nurse Association National Conference just as a, you know, Hail Mary. They may pick it, they may not. And I never expected them to pick it. It ended up being a pharmacology hours, which meant it was one of the highest attended at the national conference. And when I went and presented there, it was 500 people standing room only. They're listening to
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I guess that's a real sign of where this is all going and the demand for information and knowledge around it.
Oh, everyone was hungry and wanting to know more. And what are you going to talk about in the future with this? And all week I had people coming up to me asking me questions. And I had people coming up and saying, you know, "I'm sorry, I missed your talk. I heard it was fantastic. I can't wait for the replay," which was amazing that people are that hungry to hear this information and learn more. I think it's a real good sign of times changing and the tide moving in the right direction.
Yeah. And you had mentioned that patient that came in and had kind of the worst case scenario going on. And one of your presentations is managing worst case scenarios in psilocybin use situations, right?
Yes, I did that for the Mount Tam psilocybin summit last fall, and talking about that, and I'm trying to work on a couple projects with that, with my experience of being not only a psych nurse, but using the other end of into the emergency department and how we can, you know, fix set and setting and try to de-escalate patients and keep them calm and fix all of that and making sure that they're feeling comfortable and not ruining their experience. And if they choose to do that, and make sure that people are safe, that harm reduction approach.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that, like some of the highlights from that presentation when people come in and present, you know, having maybe quote a bad trip or even something deeper might be going on. And before people like you knew what to look for and how to identify it and how to treat it, they may have been put into scenarios that actually made it worse.
Oh, absolutely.
As opposed to helping them go through it. So can you kind of expand on that notion?
Well, I ended up, first when I thought about this, I started talking to a bunch of the other providers at work. I said, you know, what would you do if a patient was coming in on mushrooms? And the answer I was getting from people was a wider range from, you know, we need to just keep them calm and settle them down and make sure that they're feeling comfortable, all the way to, I'm going to be calling a trauma center trying to get a liver, you know, see if they're going to be a transplant because of it being mushrooms. And I realized that once I said that they were hearing mushrooms and not the psilocybin, not the magic. So it was like everyone had a different opinion. Everyone thought of something differently. So it was really difficult trying to look at that. So I went through all of the literature being in the hospital that they have on hand, like all of the textbooks on that the providers are using to read about what to do and their online resources. And really it was limited to a page or two, just a general altered mental status. And the only thing that they even have it compared, they're comparing it with like LSD use and mescaline and things like that. It's like, this is a specialized thing that we need to look at with specialized side effects. And also the, you know, what's expected, you know, someone who comes in because of the nature of psilocybin, it can cause increased blood pressure, increased pulse, nervousness, sweating. And those are normal effects for someone to expect when they're using. It's not something we need to really worry about. So I looked at that. I was trying to talk with people about that, but I end up going into researching how safe it is. And I tried finding out so much about the dangers and the, you know, overdoses. And it just really is limited in the people that did have, you know, adverse effects were, you know, major to the point of being hospitalized were far and few between. And they were limited to basically people who had, pre-existing medical conditions not sufficiently cleared. Looking at like the research that's being done through Hopkins and stuff, they're all before they go in, they're fully medically cleared and fully worked up. So I think that it's important talking to people, you know your history, know your family history, know what's going on with you mentally in your family history, all those things that they clear for Hopkins. If you're going to go in and make the conscious decision that you're going to use, do it safely. And so my presentation really focused on that to the providers, letting people know when they come into the hospital, you know, what to expect. Because if the doctors are looking at someone coming in, they're seeing someone who's agitated, aggressive, basically they're clinically psychotic at that point, you know, trying to rule out what's going on. Just knowing that, self-admitting that you had been using, helps save some time, because then we know specifically what we're looking at instead of doing all of this unneeded lab work and being able to minimize the negative interactions that may escalate the situation further.
Right. And all this sounds so scary, you know, to hear an emergency nurse talking about this and words like psychotic. You know, how do people keep themselves safe? I know you've talked about safety when it comes to psilocybin. So are there some things that your profession can recommend to, like you said, doing a background, looking at your family history? I mean, what are some things people should be looking at and being very diligent about, you know, when it comes to these things?
Well, I think first and foremost, when you're looking at it, you need to take into consideration, you know, what are some side effects that we what are some medical events that could come up? And we see people have nausea, tremor, elevated blood pressure, pulse, things like that. So these are normal that we're going to see when someone uses. These are the same symptoms we see with someone who's anxious when they become, anxiety comes out. They're very similar presentation. So being aware that, especially when you start right after use and the anxiety of what's going on, you're causing the anxiety from the medicine when we take it. So that's something that we need to be aware of, but also looking at going into it, someone who's going to be making the decision to use, we want to make sure that they're physically healthy. And how can we do that? We want to look at, be open with your providers. If you have a doctor that you see regularly, which I think everyone should, talk to them. If you can't, right, talk to them about what's going on. Tell them, this is what you're thinking about doing, and tell them you want to be medically cleared, especially someone who's up there in age like ourselves. Blood pressure, know if we have any hypertension issues, maybe a baseline EKG, some of the effects that during my research of it, of the worst case in the hospital, a couple of the individuals had issues with their kidneys, and the blood pressure changes affected in the kidneys. So it's kind of be aware of that. And I know that there's far and few between that people that have that, but just something to be aware of and conscious of. Also, knowing your family history, if you've got a family history of schizophrenia, bipolar, schizoaffective disorder, things like that, adding these hallucinogens, basically, it can kick off a psychotic episode. And it can also kick off, an acute manic episode. So be aware of that. And I wouldn't recommend someone with those diagnoses even trying. I know that there's some people that do talk about that. I'd like to all say that I'm not trying to give out medical advice. I'm just trying to, make people consciously aware of what they're doing.
Right.
You're making your own decision. But talk to your doctors about this, about what you're thinking, what you're wanting to do to be cleared medically going into it. The other part of that is have a sitter with you, have someone that you're going with. Actually, I was talking to a friend the other day about it and talking about, a trip sitter, someone who's there as a safe. And she goes, I'd rather use the word shaman because it doesn't sound like I'm doing drugs in my parents' basement in high school. And I was kind
of, Yeah,
I was like, okay, so have a shaman there, I guess, if that's what you want to call them. I'm not opposed to that either. But, having someone there, I know James Fadiman talks about, having a DD when you're out drinking, making sure you have a safe person when you're using. They can not only know what you're doing, but if something worst case happens, they can kind of calm you down, talk you off the ledge. Figuratively, of keeping you calm. But if it ends up going to the hospital or something, they can be very open. Yes, he's been using, this is where we're at. He used it this many hours. This is, kind of give us a baseline idea of what the progression's going to be.
Yeah, that's great advice.
I think it's not only great advice for the person, but it just reassures, someone who's going out on vacation, going for a hike or any other trip, you want to let someone know where you're going. So that way, if something happens.
Right. Yeah. For whatever trip you're going out on, let people know where you're going.
Yeah. And you'll know kind of.
And it's interesting because. Yeah. And I hear, it seems like one of the big trends in this community now, we went through years of this renaissance of these entheogens. We went through years of what you would describe probably like self-medication, people doing it on their own. Sometimes they have a trip sitter, sometimes they don't. And it seems like now we're getting a lot more people, due to advice that experiences like yours, are becoming integration specialists, that are becoming sitters, that are becoming therapists,
to really be there. Like you mentioned Michael Pollan's book, you know, and he went through a situation where he was with, you know, a therapist that was there with him, kind of like the studies at Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And so it does seem like there's, with people like you putting out this good information, it's starting to become more of a deliberate thing as opposed to, oh, let's just try this and see what happens.
Oh, absolutely. I know that, and I, with seeing more of these communities popping up where, I mean, I live in Maine. It's a small, you know, we've got a couple of cities here and there and it's spread out, but there's still, you know,
right,
psychedelic societies that are in these areas, and in these areas, you know, reach out to people because, you know, people may know someone that they can trust or someone that they recommend and just kind of be like, you know, I have a safe place to do and I welcome you, and having that dialogue, you know, very clear in these societies, you know, we're not going to discuss anything illegal. We're not going to discuss anything that's could be harmful or it can cause police, you know, involvement, but having the discussions of, you know, I've had this experience and just naturally coming about, you know, having right, that as a way to make sure that we're safe. Safety is key.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Safety really is key. Cause I get asked, it's interesting. You mentioned the, I don't want to say older, but you know, I'm over 50. And sometimes when I go to these conventions or conferences, I get in a, find myself in a group of people who are 50 and older and talking about, trying their very first ever experience. And so it's good that, you know, when you mentioned kidneys and background, I mean, somebody who's that age really should, you know, like you said, get a physical and make sure everything's okay and consult with a doctor.
Well, it was interesting when I went to the conference, and you mentioned about over 50. I was walking around in between different presentations, and the people that were coming up to me, I would say most of them were, I mean, I'm only 38, but they were, you know, 50 and above, a lot of them, and they had their experiences yeah, that they were talking about. You know, one had worked with Rick Doblin in the past. One person was part of Yale research, and people were coming up and just being like, oh, here's my experience. And it's kind of like, once I let people know I was a safe person to discuss it, people were willing and wanting to kind of just disclose their experience. And it was very interesting to see that, but everyone was very happy about, you know, what they had done, and to a point where it was just like, I just feel like, you know, I've been doing this for a while and the change is coming. And it was very nice to see where we're seeing, you know, older people that everyone knew it was coming. Everyone was expecting it to come. It was,
yeah.
If you read through some of the older research, which when I started working on some of these projects of the research, you know, all of the current literature makes reference to previous stuff. So I was pulling, you know, the old research from the 50s and 60s. And when I was doing right, that, I was pulling all of this old research. It was just talking about, you know, what's going on with it, what we can expect. And Dr. Pollack, who if Hamilton Morris wrote an article, The Blood Spore, on, in one of his pieces, he talks about how in 20 years we're going to be using, I feel we're going to be using these substances and referring to psilocybin to be addressing all sorts of mental health issues. And the writing was on the mm-hmm. wall, and then the prohibition came. So it's not something that's new.
Right.
We knew about this in the past. It's the writing was on the wall that many saw. And then all of a sudden we hit where we couldn't stop. And I found when I did present on it, one of the biggest things that people were, you know, as I talk about this, what they look at and what they see, people don't realize the amount of literature that's been published in the past, and they just kind of see it as, you know, this new age thing, until realize that there was thousands of studies that were published back in the 60s. There was over,
yeah,
you know, in the 50s and 60s, over 40,000 patients received LSD and psilocybin. Dozens of books were published. 6 international conferences, and over 1,000 clinical papers were published. And people are I think a lot of people think, you know, this is a new thing. The research is coming out, but this really isn't. We're picking up the research that's already been done and just updating it to modern standards.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, even the old Timothy Leary had some good studies before he came off the rails.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of stuff, I mean, where we had that, where like Dr. Cast was going out and pulling a vial of LSD out of his pockets and giving it to end of life patients, and just the patients were putting out their tongue. Mm-hmm. He would do a couple drops in their mouth, tell me he's going to come back later. You know, by today's standards, I'm definitely not saying that it's ethical, but he did it. The patients had, you know, they were had oceanic feelings, as he said. And just looking at that and just seeing, you know, there was a time that this was going on, and it was, you know, there was a change. So we need to kind of take that into consideration, that, you know, we need to get back to that.
Yeah. I agree.
And I would, to go back.
And,
To go back on the part with, like, in the hospitals and stuff, with it being scary, I think that one of the big things that we need to look at with it is, you know, if we can change part of the issue with someone who's coming in and upset, agitated, having a difficult trip, when we figure that out, you know, if we can do anything to change that set and setting for them, that's the biggest thing that we can do. Either as a trip sitter or a shaman, if you're sitting there, or in the hospital, if it gets to that point, you know, set that set and setting, because you are it's a scary environment. It's a scary environment inside of our own heads sometimes, as we all can, you know, mm-hmm. agree to, but also you take someone into a physical setting, you know, where it's loud, there's strangers everywhere, everyone's in uniform and very sterile medical environment and flashing lights and all of that stuff going on. If we can set that, you know, reset the setting that we are in and make it calm, soothing music, pull the light shade, things like that, that might be enough to kind of recenter someone to make them comfortable. And if anything, it's not going to harm and make things worse either. So having that soothing
right.
voice. And that's where it was important,
yeah.
reading some of the old research, the old clinical, you know, the research out there talking about how to provide care to someone and doing the psychiatric interviews with patients and all of the treatment. It talks about, you know, it's funny because it talks about how the nurse should have a motherly voice and talking with them and keeping them calm. And it's what Leary talks about with the setting and getting that, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's vital, that set and setting.
It's absolutely vital. And the other part of that, which I think is funny, where it comes full circle with nursing, I mean, I think that's what we do as nurses, you know. We want to make sure someone's calm. We want to make sure that they're doing okay. We want to make sure that they're whatever's going on, we're trying to limit, you know, the problem. So we have a healing space and a healing environment. I mean, that's what we do as nurses,
yeah.
no matter what we're doing. And I think that, you know, looking at in history, the old literature, as I'm reading it, it talks about, you know, once the doctor leaves, so after the patient has received, in this case, oftentimes it was a LSD for the initial research, but after, you know, LSD lasts 10 to 12 hours, you know, there's not a lot of physicians that were sitting there for that whole time, or they're taking a break. And who's sitting with the patient?
Right.
The nurses are.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, there was a MAPS article from the summer of 94 where there's a nurse called Laura Berg, and she talks about her experience as being a psychiatric, sitting in on some of these psychiatric cases with people as they're tripping, and she was part of the studies. And it was funny because she referred to it as being a flight nurse.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of those things,
yeah.
that I'm talking is, what's a flight nurse? You know, you're going there, someone's going on a trip.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I had never thought about your profession essentially providing or building, creating a set and setting for every patient that comes in to help them be in the most comfortable place they can be. And it's, so then when you look at that, it's become so obvious that you would need that with a psychedelic experience.
Yeah, we call it in nursing, we call it the milieu, the environment that they're around. So it's one of those things where, you know, we're trying, it's part of the milieu is addressing it. And this is the same stuff we, you know, someone who's on a psychedelic trip and altered mental status from chemicals like that, or someone who's acutely psychotic. It's the same, you know, we work with people doing the same thing. And I think that, and as I've talked to nurses about that, it's like, oh, I never thought of it that way. That's exactly what we're doing. You know, someone has altered mental status.
Yeah. And I know that you also mentioned you were in that documentary Dosed. Are these some of the same topics that you contributed to that?
That's going to be coming up. I'm going to be part of the Q&A screening here in a couple weeks here in Portland.
Oh, nice.
It's going to be, I'm very excited to seeing it. I think it's great for the times are changing and people talking about it with like 60 Minutes had the part there with Anderson Cooper. We had, after I came back from my presentation, I did at the national conference, I did it in New Orleans. I did it here at my hospital for Grand Rounds. And I didn't know how it was going to go. I do work in a medium-sized hospital. But mm-hmm. I asked them about, you know, would you guys be interested in me doing this as a presentation here? And they were, okay, do you think you can talk about this for an entire hour? You've only got like 30 slides. And I was like, yeah, I can. Yeah, I can. I just did this 2 weeks ago in front of 500 people. I think I can do it here. Okay, yeah, we can do that. So I got it all lined up, and it was the highest attended Grand Rounds at my hospital ever. There was 91 people that officially signed in, and the room was, they had to bring more chairs and more tables and all of that. And I think it was really interesting because I had one side of the room was the psychiatric providers I work with. You know, there's a handful of like 10 on the left. The rest of the room were all nurses, PAs, doctors, students. And it was interesting to see where like everyone was there wanting to know more about this. And it was interesting because as I'm talking, people were half engaged for a little bit of it, you know, talking about the history. But the moment I started talking about like end of life and palliative care, it was almost distracting everyone setting down their cell phones at the same time and having all of a sudden having their full attention. Like I wasn't expecting like that wave of just everyone going, oh, this is what I want to hear about. So I started elaborating on end of life and improving, you know, people's perception, not being afraid of dying. And everyone was just wanting to hear more. And I think it was great to see, not only is this interesting for this, you know, psych practitioners of what's coming with the psychedelics, but other applications that we can start using it for just to improve people's life in general. You know, it's great to see, and it's the times changing, not just for us, everyone wants to know more about it.
Yeah. Like we said, there's a growing demand. I'm surprised that when I've seen a couple of these conferences I've gone to, they sell out quickly and they're hugely attended.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're seeing the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's important that, you know, people want to talk about it. So once this happens, we're seeing where people are asking questions, which is a great thing. One of the physicians I work with came over to me afterward and she said, CJ, I just want to let you know your talk was fantastic. And it gives me hope that actually things will change for people addressing their mental health issues.
And that's huge.
She's a resident who I wouldn't have expected, you know, not being in psych, you know, I guess I kind of pigeonhole, you know, professions to an extent, but here, you know, I'm excited for what's going to come about with the changes from it. I think it's fantastic. There's some hope for people.
Yeah. Yeah, huge hope.
Huge.
Now, your work is in a very specific timeline of what people are going through and when they go through it. So I don't know if you've had any of these experiences, but given that the Stoned Ape Reports is about transformation and, you know, better outcomes, have you experienced anybody who's had a transformational experience as a result of these entheogens, you know, whether it's addiction or religion or grief or whatever it is, you know, as you've seen these things come through, have you ever seen any cases of a really amazing transformation? And it doesn't have to be amazing, like a miracle, you know what I mean? But just like a positive change that somebody has gone through as a result of this.
Well, I'll, you know, self-disclosure for myself. I had an experience where I was out on a hike, and it was almost like having this epiphany. It was this moment where everything seemed like it started making sense. It was this aha moment. And it was, you know, for me, it was just absolutely amazing just to kind of go, wait a minute, there's something to this. And it's that quantum change moment that just came about where I was just like, everything started coming together and everything clicked. And I kind of was I had my research going. This is before any of my presentations or anything, and just kind of like problem solving and thinking about what's going to go on. And it just struck me that this is bigger than I even can fathom at this point. And I need to do something with it. I need to share this in some way. And at that moment was when the Entheo Nurse came about, like that thought. I was like, I need to share this,
yeah,
and pull it all together, like making sure people understand, you know, this is not, I'm not just someone, I'm coming from a medical background, a medical experience with this and wanting to share. For myself, my nursing background, I was a holistic approach to nursing. My program I went to is one of only 14 holistic programs in the nation. I could sit for the board certification if I wanted, but part of my education was the working with the Reiki. I've done yoga for nurses, things like that. My mentors in school, just stepped down. She was the American Cannabis Nurse President of last year. And wow. It was, yeah, which people don't, I don't even think people realize there's such an organization first.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's a real organization, and it's making changes. And so I kind of realized that there's something I need to do bigger with this. So that's where I was thinking about, you know, entheogens, and I went, okay, entheogens, nursing, entheo nurse, pulling it all together.
Yeah.
There's really going to be in helping that credibility of, you know, this is a bigger thing. And that's at that moment when I came up with that, I was like, how am I going to go about doing this? I've already got some presentations booked. I've got some talks and lectures. And I was just like, I'm going to ride this out. I'm going to just see where things naturally occur with this, but I'm not going to slow it down. And I'm just going to, but if anything doesn't come about it, at least, you know, I'm doing something. And it's in the last 6 months, this has just blown up to opportunities I've got with outside agencies and different places and just these talks and this education.
Nice.
And it just came about, you know, to me out of nowhere. And then as I've been talking to more people about it, you know, at conferences and stuff, people have talked about their change, but I've got a friend of a friend who's actually he's a pastor. In some capacity. And he's disclosed to me about his own issues with major depression over the years and how he has, he has addressed that with using psilocybin, and just as a result,
nice.
More present in the moment, more present with his family and his congregation. And just, you know, he's not out there screaming from the pulpit about it, but he's open with people. He feels comfortable saying, you know, this has changed my life.
Yes. Yes. And need more people out there sharing those stories for sure.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, when we, you know, with the religious part of it, you know, if you look at the old studies that have been done over the years from the, like Walter Pankey and his study at Harvard for the Good Friday. I mean, these were studies that were working with theology students and, you know, that approach with God. Yeah. And just, you know, people don't realize that, you know, he had his degree in religion and divinity. And he ended up, he spoke at a conference in 67 to theologians, where he said, you know, the dangers of abuse are not allowed to cloud solid scientific evidence. When psychedelics are done in a controlled settings, adverse effects are rare. We need to look at the research and understand what they can do and what they and how they work. And this is to religion experience. You know, people were using it this time, looking at being closer to God. And James Fadiman talks about, you know, where he talks to people right wing about how, you know, you want to be closer to God. There's things out there. And I think that that's where the culture shift of people need to make their own decisions and looking at, you know, thinking about what is their intent, what is the set, and what can we do? What else can we do about this, and making it a safe discussion to have?
Yeah. And those are the kind of discussions and presentations and conversations we need to have going forward.
We do. And I think that as this happens and people start talking about it more and it becomes a safer environment, you know, we're going to start seeing more of the people having those personal transformations, or at least talking about their personal transformations and their changes. And we need to, you know, talk about making it, you know, what is going on, what has happened, what are some...
Yes, absolutely.
And that's where I thank you for, you know, your podcast. And this is a way to get the information out there. And there's pockets of information.
Yeah, well, I'm grateful to have people like you come on and be so open and give such great information.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And it's we have pockets of it. I mean, I've been working on this Entheo Nurse thing since last summer. I've done these presentations and talking at like the American Psychiatric Nurse Association, things like that. But I didn't realize during all of this, I had a message I'd received through Facebook the other day, a couple weeks ago, where someone else was in the process of setting up the International Association of Psychedelic Nursing.
Nice.
This is a national organization that she was trying to set up. And, it was funny because my professor she was common friends from the American Cannabis Nurse Association. She sends a message, hey, CJ, you should get in touch with Taylor and work on something. And we had just found out about each other a couple days before. And it's just like, so people are out there and looking and wanting to know. We need, as we talk more, we'll see that what everyone's doing so we can have a common community.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And all work together for that common cause and our own unique angles and perspectives.
Yeah. I've been in contact with some people locally. I had no idea we're doing ketamine infusions until they're going to be on the panel with me at the dosed Q&A coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So I look forward to talking with Colin and seeing what they're doing here in Portland, Maine for ketamine infusions and just seeing what they've got going on and how they're doing it. I just just completed the Psychedelics Today, Navigating Psychedelics for Clinicians, and learning more about ketamine. And in my world where I work, you know, ketamine we use as a anesthetic. We use it for kids that they need to do stitches on over their eyes, and we're using it to sedate people. But there's all these other uses that we don't even know how and why, and we're learning more about it. So it's just we need to all put the information together.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're doing that. And I'm truly grateful for you coming here and sharing all your information. Is there anything else you wanted to get out there before we wrap up?
Not anything specific. If you're a nurse, I encourage you to look into the International Association of Psychedelic Nursing. It's on it's absolutely ground level right now. I think we've got 100 some people in the group. We're working on getting a international recognition for that. I've got my Facebook page going and Entheo Nurse. My website is kind of under construction, but if you Google search Entheo Nurse, I'm on there. I'll be sharing more information for topics and stuff. I'm looking forward to working with Mount Tam Psilocybin Summit here in the future and some projects talking with Psychedelics Today and other places. So I think it's interesting, you know, what we've got out there, and I'm looking forward to where all of this is going to lead for me personally. And I'm very grateful for the opportunities I've had because of this. I've also
wonderful.
I did speaking with one of my friends, her podcast, Nursing School Struggle. I go into more detail of the psychedelics and psychiatry and stuff. So it's getting the information out there to people. We need to do it. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, and thank you. I will make sure and put links to those pages you just mentioned and the resources you just mentioned. And again, CJ, thank you first and foremost for all the amazing work that you're doing and the leadership role that you're taking in the community. And secondly, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you, Stuart. Appreciate it.
That concludes this edition of the Stoned Ape Reports. Thank you for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at Stoned Ape Comedy. And subscribe to our newsletter at www.stonedapecomedy.com. Again, thanks for listening, and catch you next time, Stoned Apes.